We're up to Parshat Toldot. We'll do a quick overview of the parasha. In our parasha, we're told how Yitzhak and Rivka couldn't have children. They prayed, and then Rivka gets pregnant. It's exceptionally painful. Hashem reveals to her that she has two great nations in her. And when she gives birth, the first one comes out. He's got a beard. He's got hair on his chest. He's extraordinarily hairy, and they call him Esav. Like a field of grass. The next one comes out. He's holding on to the first one's heel. They call him Yaakov. As they grow, Esav is into hunting, and Yaakov is into studying. And Yitzchak really loves Esav. Esav's always bringing him good food. And Rebecca, Rivka, really loves Yaakov. And one day, Yaakov is making a dish. Esav comes in from the field. He's tired. He says to Yaakov, "Give me, you know, I'm going to open my mouth. You pour in some of that red stuff down my mouth because I'm tired." And Yaakov says, "Why don't you sell me your rice for the firstborn?" And Esav says, "Man, I'm going to die. Give me, what do I need these rights to the firstborn? You can have it. Just give me the food." And so Yaakov says, "Promise me." And he does. And he sells him his rights to being firstborn. And Yaakov gives him bread and the dish he was making. And Esav walks out and he mocks it. He says, "What a fool. Look at me. I got a free meal." And there's a famine. And Isaac goes off to Plishti territory, to the king Avimelech. And Hashem warns him, "Don't go down to Egypt. Stick around here. I'm going to bless you here. And you will multiply. And your children will be blessed by all the nations of the land." And so Yitzchak sticks around in Philistine territory. The people ask him about Rebecca, and he says, "She's my sister." And at one point, Avimelech says, he peeks through the window, and he sees the Yitzchak joking around with Rivka, and he says, "Hey, wait a second, she's your wife. What'd you say she's your sister for?" So Yitzchak says, "I was scared you'd kill me, people would kill me to take her." So Avimelech warns everyone, no one's allowed to touch the man or his wife. So even though it's a difficult year, there's a famine, there's a drought, Yitzchak produces tremendous amounts of crops, and he becomes very wealthy. And Avimelech tells Yitzchak, "You got to leave, because you're more wealthy than I am. Everyone looks at you and sees how wealthy you are." So Yitzchak travels, and wherever he travels, there are fights. First of all, the Philistines have been stuffing up all the wells that Abraham dug. And Yitzchak tries to redig them and rename them the names that his father had. He travels to Beersheba, and Hashem appears to him and tells him, "Don't worry, I'm with you. Even though things are rough, I'm with you." He builds an altar, and Avimelech shows up, and he tells him, "We want to make a peace treaty." See, this has been our history. We want to make a peace treaty. Yitzchak says, "You guys hated me. You kicked me out of your country." And they say, "Yeah, but we see God is with you, so we want to make a pact with you. You don't harm us, just like we didn't harm you. We sent you off in peace." So Yitzchak makes a feast with them, they make the pact, and they leave him in peace. Esav's 40 years old, he marries a woman, and another one, and these two are very disrespectful to Yitzchak and Rebecca. Yitzchak is getting old, he tells Esav, "Bring me some good food, and I want to bless you before I die." Rebecca overhears this, she tells Yaakov, "Look, I'm going to make a delicious meal, you go into your father." At this point Yitzchak can't see anymore, and Rebecca tells him, "You'll tell him you're Esav, and you'll get the blessings." And Yaakov doesn't want to do it, he says, "You know, Dad might catch on, and then he'll curse me," and she says, "Don't worry, it's on me." And so she says, "Go." So he brings her the goats she asks for. She prepares the delicious meal. Yaakov gets dressed up. He puts the goat's hairs on him. And then he goes in with the food. And his father starts questioning him. He says, "Who is this?" "That's Yaakov, Amesav, your eldest son." He says, "Come here, I want to kiss you. I want to feel you. It doesn't sound right. You sound like Yaakov." And he smells him. He says, "Look, you smell blessed." And he blesses him. He gives him all the blessings. He should have bounty. He should have fruit. He should have the dew of the heaven. He should have plenty of grain and wine. And nations should bow to him. He should be master over his brother. And anyone who curses him should be cursed. Whoever blesses him should be blessed. He finishes blessing him. And Yaakov is about to leave the room when he hears Esav huffing and puffing, entering into the room. He stands in the shadows of the room. He stands behind the door. As Esav charges in, he says, "Sit up, Dad. I got food for you." And Esav asks him, "Who are you?" Yitzchak asks him, who are you? Esav says, I'm your eldest son, I'm Esav. And Yitzchak gets very scared. He says, wait, who just brought me all that food? I just ate delicious food and I blessed him. He should be blessed. And when Esav heard that, he lets out a roar. He says, Dad, bless me too. And Yitzchak tells him, you know, your brother conned you. He took your blessing. And Esav says, that's why he's called Yaakov. Yaakov means to deceive. He's deceived me twice. He took my rights to the firstborn, and now he took my blessing. Dad, didn't you leave anything for me? Yitzchak says, you know, I made him your master. I told him all his brothers would be his servants. I blessed him with the grain and the wine, and what am I going to give you? And Esav says, Dad, you only have one blessing. Bless me too. And he starts crying. And Yitzchak tells him, you should live off the earth. You should have the dew from above. You should live by the sword, and you should be subservient to your brother. But you should know that if he sins, then you will remove his yoke from you. And from that day onward, Esav is waiting to kill Yaakov. I'm going to be subservient to him. Esav says, I'm going to kill him. Rivka hears this. She tells Yaakov, I want you to get out of here. Go to my brother to Haran. Stick around there till your brother comes down. He should remember. He should forget what you did to him. And then I'll call you back. Why should I lose you both on the same day? And she tells Yitzchak, look at how we're suffering from Esav's wives. Let's send Yaakov off to my brother and find a good wife. So Yitzchak calls him in and he blesses Yaakov and he tells him, I don't want you to marry the girls from around here. Go to your uncle to love and find yourself a wife, and God should bless you with Abraham's blessings, and then you'll come back. So Yaakov runs away. Esav sees what's going on. So he figures, my parents don't like my wife, so he takes another wife. And Yaakov leaves. And that's the end of our parasha. So now let's really see what's going on. I gave a very short overview of the parasha, and there's really much more to the parasha than meets the eye.
Hey,
yes?
How come Yitzchak made the same treaty as David Melech has on there?
It's a good question. Let's see as we approach it. It's a good question. Our parsha begins with a recounting that the following are the children of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Abraham gave birth to Isaac. Gee, you just told me that. So our sages tell us that what we saw in last week's parsha, 2 weeks ago in the parsha, was that Avram was 100 years old, Sarah was 90 years old, and they couldn't have kids. And then Sarah is abducted by Avimelech. And Avimelech and his whole house can't procreate. And God tells Avimelech, give her back and ask Abraham to pray on your behalf, and then you'll be cured. So then he gives her back. Abraham prays on Avimelech's behalf. And from there we learn the rule that he who prays on behalf of his friend, if he needs the same thing, then he gets the blessing first. So Abraham prays that Avimelech and his family should be able to procreate again. And as his prayers are answered, Abraham is also blessed that he can procreate. So what happened was, people started talking. Gee, she lived with Avram for over half a century and she didn't get pregnant. She spends one night in Avimelech's palace and she did get pregnant. So people started talking, whose kid is that anyways, this Yitzchak? And it's really extraordinary if you think about it. She's an old woman. She's 90 years old. This is an open miracle that Sarah has a baby at this age. But that doesn't convince anyone. Avimelech has apologized to Sarah over his abduction. There's been an open miracle where Avimelech and his family could not procreate if they wanted to, but that doesn't stop people. And here we see an important rule. There's something called leitzanut. When a person wants to mock, a person can mock anything and anyone. It doesn't matter how respectful, honorable, or truthful a person is. If we want to deride them, we can. There's an open miracle where Avram and Sarah have Yitzchak. But that doesn't stop people from making fun of it and saying, gee, I wonder who she got pregnant from. If you really wonder, why don't you analyze what happened there? Avimelech couldn't have any kids. Avimelech begged Avram to pray on his behalf. You see an open miracle. But that doesn't stop people. We see another thing. Our sages say that Hashem purposely made Yitzchak look like Avram, so that everyone who saw Yitzchak would say, yeah, yeah, that's Avram's kid, he looks just like him. And that was to preclude the rumors that were going around about who Yitzchak's father really was. Sometimes you could say, what do I care if people are talking? You see that Hashem did care. Hashem took care to refute these rumors, to show that Yitzchak was clearly Avram's son. By the way, we know Avram could procreate because Avram had many kids. I'm saying the claim is baseless if you analyze it. Avram had a kid from Hagar, Avram had many kids from Keturah, so why would we think that he couldn't have a kid from Sarah? So again, that doesn't stop rumors. If you want to spread rumors about someone, you can. And that's why the Torah tests that Yitzchak, the son of Avram, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak, Yitzchak looked like Avram. Yitzchak ben Avraham. Yitzchak walked around feeling proud that his father was Avraham. Avraham olid et Yitzchak. Avraham walked around and he was proud he had a son like Yitzchak. We wish ourselves that we should be proud of our children and our children should be proud of us. Both are important. Sometimes we think, I want to have nachas from my kids. You also want your kids to have nachas from you. People sometimes feel like they're done. They're finished their work. They graduated Machon Meir. Now their children have to work. It doesn't work that way. We're an ongoing work in progress. And we want our kids to be proud of us. Then we have to reflect that. You have to go to Daf Yomi Shir. You have to say Tehillim every day. You have to learn the Parsha. You have to come to the Shabbos table and have something to offer your kids. If you show up at the Shabbos table and you say, son, I send you to yeshiva, tell me, what parsha is it? What's he going to feel like? Or you know, you talk one way, but you live another way. So we have to prepare. That involves a certain amount of work. Yitzchak's 40 years old when he marries Rebecca. You're supposed to get married at 18. But Yitzchak wants to prepare for life, so he takes time to learn. And anyways, his betrothed is... His Kala is not yet born, right? Rebecca was only born when he was older. So Yitzchak gets married at 40. That's an old age. But Yitzchak was preparing for life. He went to Machon Meir. And he didn't get all pressured, hey, I'm in the Machon already 3 months, I better be married. No. He said, I need to prepare for life. You know, my life is going to be different if I prepare. So Yitzchak takes the time to study. The simple reading is that Rebecca is 14 years old when she marries Yitzchak. Well, there's a medrash that she's 3 years old. Yitzchak prays about his wife. She can't have kids. Your wives should be a part of your prayer. We're partners in life. Very often women don't have that much time to pray. They're dealing with the house. They're dealing with the kids. So part of our prayer should include our wives. Part of our prayer should include our kids. And when a person makes requests for himself, he should be making requests for other people too. His wife, his children. You want your children to encounter positive people. You don't want them to encounter negative people. That has to be part of the prayer. And finally, she gets pregnant. So the pregnancy is excruciatingly difficult. Pregnancy can be very hard. You know the old joke, a guy goes to class with his wife on how to on childbirth and pregnancy, and in the middle of the class, the teacher says, I want you men to experience what it's like to be pregnant. So every man has to strap on 3 pillows on their stomach, and then when they have these 3 pillows attached to their stomach, so the teacher calls one man forward, and she says, Mr. Dunningen, I want to do something with you. She takes a pair of keys, drops them to the floor, and she says, sir, could you please bend down and pick them up? You're imagining your pregnant wife. So he says, sure, I'm going to do it as though I'm pregnant. So he puts his hand behind his back, and he walks forward in the room, waddling along with his 3 pillows in front of his stomach. He waddles back. He looks down at the keys, and he goes, I'm supposed to make believe I'm pregnant, right? So the teacher goes, right. So he goes, he takes in a deep breath, he sighs. He said, and he turns to his wife and says, "Honey, can you please get that for me?" So, but the truth is that when we're pregnant, so it is difficult. It's hard to bend down. It's hard to get up. It's hard to sit. It's hard to find a comfortable position to sleep in. And it can be painful. Children sometimes sit on different nerves. Children can hit different nerves. Children can be sitting on the bladder. A person feels constantly like they have to go. Well, Rebecca is suffering much more than these regular pains of childbirth, of pregnancy. So the kids are driving her crazy, and she's in such pain, she starts asking other women. And she asks them, "Is this normal?" And the women tell her, "No." She questions her neighbors. She questions every woman she can meet and asks them, "Hey, is this the way pregnancy should feel?" And they all tell her, "No, this is much worse. You're in pain like you shouldn't be." So she goes to the Academy of Shem and Aver, and she says, "Can you ask God what's going on here?" And Hashem answers her. And he tells her, "You're right, you're carrying an extraordinary pregnancy. This is no ordinary pregnancy. You have the two great nations of the world in your stomach. And these two great nations are going to divide once they come out of the stomach. And they're fighting in utero because their whole lives will be a fight. And there will constantly be a struggle between the two of them. As the Talmud tells us in Tractate Megillah, if a person shows up and tells you that Edom is up and Israel is down, you can believe him, it's a possibility. If a person comes and tells you Israel is up and Edom is down, you could believe him, it's a possibility. But if someone tells you they're both up, you can't believe him, impossible. If someone tells you they're both down, can't believe him, it's impossible. We're like two sides of a seesaw. If one's up, the other's got to be down. And the fight in utero is showing something unnatural. What do these two babies know? Hashem is coming to show this is built into the world. It's a rule in the world. Esav sonet Yaakov. There's going to be a constant struggle here. Even though we're on the defensive, the struggle keeps going. They're on the offensive. And it doesn't matter what we're going to do. We're not going to placate them. It's not about the houses in East Jerusalem. It's not about the bus driver who committed suicide in the last 24 hours. It doesn't matter. There's always going to be something they're going to claim against us. They are constantly on the offensive. We are on the defensive. We don't fight back. We're not looking to fight with them. As you'll see, Yaakov Avinu constantly is on the defensive. What does the name Yaakov mean? Yaakov could mean act with deceit. Yaakov, he will be deceitful. He will do things in a roundabout way. Yaakov can also mean he will ultimately overcome. We're in it for the long haul. We're not looking to win this second. We're looking to win ultimately. We're fighting a fight of the spirit. We're not fighting the physical fight. The Nazi is standing over an old Jew, beating him and asking him, "Tell me now you're the chosen people." And the old Jew looks back and says, "One thing's clear, you're not." We're not necessarily victorious in the battles. The Crusaders, the Nazis, they inflicted a heavy toll on us. But in the long run, we're winning. Because we're fighting for the spirit. We're not fighting for the body. Physically, we're the weak one right now. But spiritually, we're infusing the world with the spirit. And we are constantly infusing the world with the spirit. You know what Hitler wrote? He says, "If I annihilate all the Jews of the world, but leave one baby Jew." Hitler viewed the Jews as the conscience of the world. Hitler wrote that the world has a conscience, which is a weakness. And that conscience comes from the Jews. If not for the Jews, the world would be far more ruthless. People would be more evolutionist. Survival of the fittest. This idea that people have compassion and caring for the weak is a weakness. Right? Hitler didn't want insane asylums. Hitler didn't want places that take care of the poor or the weak. The survival of the fittest, right? Eugenics, right, guys? You guys know what I'm talking about? So Hitler said, if you leave behind one Jew, and he's a baby, and then he grows up, and he never meets other Jews, and he never sees a synagogue, he will still develop into a ethical, kind person. And he will propagate this idea of being kind to the poor and the weak. So I have to finish everyone off. Why was he so into playing around with people's capacity to procreate? He said, I have to ensure there's no future generation. It's not only about this generation. What he knew was the gifts that Hashem gave us. The gifts to be kind, to be the conscience, to propel the world spirit forward. And that's what we're fighting for. So Rebekah is told there's going to be an ongoing battle in utero. Who is Amalek? Amalek is Esav's grandson. We'll encounter him at the end of the parsha. And then the next week's parsha, Esav has a grandson whose name is Amalek. And from him evolves the people of Amalek. So what we're seeing right now is a fight in utero that represents the struggle of the world. The constant battle that's going to be between Yaakov and Esav. Yes?
Who do we consider Esav not as? Is it like all the not-Jewish people that are not in the Parashat?
We saw in the Rambam Zikeret Teiman, the Rambam wrote that Edom is the Christian. Christianity is what we call Edom, because the area of Edom converted in mass to Christianity. That was Maimonides' explanation in Igeret Teiman that we saw yesterday. Back to our parasha. So, question number one is this idea that the older one will be subservient to the younger one, that Yaakov is the chosen one. Rebecca is enlightened to all this. Does Yitzchak know about this?
No. I say yeah, just because your answer.
So, she doesn't tell Yitzchak. Why doesn't she tell Yitzchak? Because Rivka has such respect for Yitzchak, she assumes he knows it. She assumes that if this is what Hashem is saying, Yitzchak must know it too. So the children are born, and the first one comes out, and his skin is bright red. And he's covered with hair. He's got a beard. He's got hair on his chest, on his back, on his legs. The kid is like a mature adult. That's unusual. So everyone says, Esav, this is like he's ready-made, asui, he's finished. He's a finished product. And Yitzchak looks at the kid who's red. We don't circumcise a kid when he's born red, because red can be an indication that he hasn't absorbed, his blood isn't absorbed well, and if he could be a hemophiliac, and if they circumcise him, he might bleed to death. So Yitzchak waits, and he sees that his color doesn't change, and he continues waiting until Esav is 13 years old, and by then they can recognize that he's had his cuts, he's had his bruises, he's okay, he can be circumcised. And Yitzchak says to Esav, now it's time to circumcise like Yishmael at age 13. And Esav says, don't you touch me. And so Esav remains uncircumcised for life. Yaakov comes out, he's holding on to Esav's heel. And so they name him Yaakov. Yitzchak's 60 years old. The two grow up, they reach age 15. And Esav is a hunter. And Yaakov is studying. But Esav is always interested in looking good. Esav's focus is, how can I look good? How can I impress people? That's why Esav is compared to the pig, because the pig always shows his split hoofs. Even though he doesn't chew his cud, he wants to show you, I'm a kosher animal, look at my split hoofs. So Esav is always interested in looking good. So Esav would always know enough Torah to impress his father. And then he'd ask his father those little questions that really aren't relevant, but it was as though, I want to know the finest detail. Salt. Do I have to tithe my salt and give, you know, how much salt do you use, right? Do I have to give the poor a tithe of my salt? Is he giving the poor anything? He's stealing people's money, he's stealing people's wives. But he comes to his father and asks, do I have to tithe salt? Rav Pesach Zatzal used to say, if you'd see Yaakov and Esav walking down the street, you'd see two people looking identical. They were twins. Only one of them would have payas that were a little bit longer, and his tzitzis were hanging down a little bit longer, and that was Esav. Because his whole point was to impress everyone. It wasn't about being real. It was about showing like he was worth something. So the two grow up, and Esav's always trying to make the best impression, but he's always busy hunting. He's into the killing game. And our sages say when they become 15, that's when you could recognize what they're like. If you want to learn chinuch, look at people's children from 15 onward. The fact that they're all cute and sweet and nice when they're 7 and 9 and 12 doesn't tell you anything about whether their chinuch succeeded. Look at them as they mature beyond that, and then you see if you can learn from their chinuch. So Esav grows up. And he goes out into the field hunting one day, and along comes Nimrod. Now, Nimrod is wearing his jacket, that he stole, goes back a long story. There's the jacket they took out of the Garden of Eden that God made for Adam and Eve. And it's a jacket which, whenever animals sense it, that jacket has holiness. It's made by God. Animals would always become subservient when they sense that jacket. Esav sees Nimrod with his jacket, and Nimrod says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm Esav." He says, "What are you doing hunting in my forest?" Esav says, "Whose forest?" And Nimrod says, "I'm the master of all these forests. And if you want to hunt in my forest, you pay me taxes and get permission." And Esav says, "Forget it." And Nimrod says, "You're dead." And Esav runs. And Nimrod says, "We're going to duel tomorrow." And Esav says, "Fine." So the next day, Nimrod comes out into the forest. He has all his men with him. And Esav hides. And he sees Nimrod with his men. And Nimrod and his men span out looking for Esav until finally Nimrod's alone. And when Nimrod is alone on his horse, Esav comes out of hiding and says, "Hey, you looking for me?" Nimrod says, "Yeah." So Esav says, "You want a duel? Come on." Esav's a young 15-year-old. Nimrod gets off his horse. Esav has just raped an engaged girl. Esav's feeling really high. And he tells Nimrod, you want to fight? Come, let's fight. Nimrod says, "You're dead." Esav says, "Before we duel, why don't we just take off our jackets?" And he turns around as though he's going to take off his jacket. Nimrod says, "Gee, it's hot. Good idea." He turns around to take off his jacket. As he turns around and he's not looking, Esav jumps him and kills him. Esav's raped for the first time, killed for the first time on this day. But just before he does these vile acts, Avram drops dead. Now, Avram and Nimrod have spent their lives fighting. Avram fights for the spirit. Avram has been preaching monotheism. Nimrod has been trying to preach paganism. That's why Nimrod incarcerated Avram. That's why Nimrod had Avram thrown into the burning furnace. It's interesting that they both died on the same day, and that Nimrod was ultimately killed by Avram's own grandson, by Esav. But Avram was promised by Hashem that he will die in peace. He will come to an old age and die in peace. So Hashem had Avram pass away that day so that Avram wouldn't know about his grandson becoming a murderer and a rapist. So Avram passes away, and a few minutes later, Avram's own grandson, Esav, murders Nimrod, takes that prized jacket that all of humanity cherished, that one thing that we had that was God made, and takes it home. He's huffing and puffing, he's hiding from Nimrod's men, and he runs into Yaakov's tent. Yaakov has heard that Grandpa Avram passed away. And so his father is sitting in mourning. The custom is that when someone's sitting in mourning, we prepare them round food to calm them, to tell them, you know, the world is round, and there are times in life where you should be like a circle that's completely whole, that doesn't have any opening. So too, you should keep your mouth shut. Right now, you shouldn't talk too much. You might say things you'll regret later out of pain, out of suffering. So Avram's making lentils, this red soup for his father. Yaakov is making lentils for his father Yitzchak. Esav comes charging in. He's covered with blood. And he says, "Yaakov, what you got cooking?" And Yaakov said, "Grandpa Avram died." Esav says, "You see? You see? There's no point in being pious. The pious die too." Yaakov says, "You know, you carry the family name. You're the Bechor. You're the firstborn. You're the one who takes Avram's name with you." And Esav says, "It does me no honor in my line of work. It's not an honor to have a grandfather who's pious. What do they say? He's a murderer and his grandfather was pious. It doesn't go well. I need Al Capone as my grandfather, not Avram." Yaakov says, "Gee, then give it to me." Esav says, "You can have it. I haven't seen that this God-fearing business keeps people from death. Look, even Avram died today. Look how God-fearing he was. What good is it to me that I'm going to be the descendant who has Avram's name? I'm the firstborn. I'm called the continuation of this line. Look at it. I'm going to die too. Yaakov, did you see that this system works?" A friend of mine was in the oncology unit getting radiation. And next to him sat a nun. And he turns to the nurse that comes to take him into radiation and he says to her, "Tell me, I come here every week to get radiation. I see every religion sitting here. Did you see any religion that doesn't come into the oncology unit? Does any of them work?" So I didn't want to tell him when he quoted me this conversation. I didn't want to tell him. That's what Esav said in our parsha, right? Look at Avram. He dropped dead. So what use is it to be God-fearing? Yeah, God signed a contract. Did God tell you, if you be God-fearing, I won't make you die? No, on the contrary. Hashem does not say that. But okay, if you want to mock religion, you can say that line. So coming back to Esav, Savram says, you want to cut a deal, we have to sign a contract, you have to promise me. Have some bread. You want the dish, you have to we have to make a deal. And Yaakov tells him anyways, this is for Dad. You know, Dad is sitting Shiva, Dad is mourning, I prepared this dish for him. Esav says, I'm hungry. So Yaakov says, okay, you don't want to be the continuation of the family, you don't care that Grandpa died today, you give me the rights to be the continuation of the family. Esav says, it's a deal, just give me the food. Yaakov says, okay, they sign a deal, he promises him, he signs the contract, and Esav gets his red lentils, and he walks out, and he starts telling everyone, can you believe what kind of fool my brother is? Can you believe it? He gave me this whole dish he was making for what? For the rights of being the firstborn. Who needs it? Look at him. And Vayivez Esav, he mocks it. He gets up and walks out and mocks the deal. There's a famine. Yitzchak travels southward. Yitzchak thinks, my dad traveled south to Egypt. I should go to Egypt. Hashem tells him, no. You can't just take things and apply them without understanding. You are not fit for going to Chutz Laretz. One of the worst mistakes people make in life is that they see something someone pious does and they figure copy-paste. If he does it, it's right for me. Who said? He has many calculations why he does A or B or C. You have to figure out what's right for you. The Torah doesn't tell us to copy-paste. The Torah says you have to figure out what's right for you in your generation, in your time, in your circumstance, in your life. Halacha is very personal. When I was interviewed in Kochav Yaakov, one of the things I asked them, I said, why do you want me? If you have someone local who could take the rabbinate, you're better off, because if I become rabbi here, it'll take me a few years before I can answer questions, because some questions are very personal. You have to understand a person before you can answer his question. If I don't know you and I don't know where you're coming from, I can't answer every question. Some of the questions are, I can't answer every question anyways, but some of the questions are personal, and they, in order to know whether to be lenient or stringent, you have to know a person's circumstance. So that's what Hashem tells Yitzchak. You are not fitting for going to Chutz Laretz. You can't go to Egypt. Stick around. You stay in Israel. So Yitzchak tells everyone that Rebecca is his sister. And then Avimelech looks through the window and sees him joking around with Rivka. Guys, did you hear that? Yitzchak's pious. Yitzchak's holy. Yitzchak represents Yiras Hashem, the awe of Hashem. But when he's with his wife, he's joking around. Our sages expected that when a person is with his wife, when they're going to be intimate, there's going to be a jovial relationship there. There's going to be lightheadedness there. There's going to be joking around going on there, even by someone like Yitzchak, to the point where Avimelech sees it and says, wait a second, she's your wife. That's not the way a brother and sister behave. So, Yitzchak explains himself. He was scared for his life. And that year, Yitzchak is extraordinarily prosperous until Avimelech kicks him out. Our sages say that the wells that they kept refilling were actually academies. Every well was a place that people would gather. And when people would gather, Savram would establish academies there teaching monotheism. And when the Philistines filled the wells, what they were doing was they were saying, we don't want Avram's education spreading anymore. And when Yitzchak redug the wells, Yitzchak was again reinstituting the academies that Avram had established. Yes?
How come Yitzchak and also Avram, how come they like didn't trust in God, not didn't trust in God, but it seemed they didn't trust in God to protect them against the king, you know, Paro and Avram.
So that's a machlokas. Some say that they made a mistake in doing this, and others say that this was part of the ishtadlut that they had to do. When a person is faced with a problem, he has to find the solution. The question is, on their level, were they expected to have trust to the point where they would not have done this? Or was this, on their level, kosher hishtadlut? A kosher amount of attempt to make things work. Hashem wants us to attempt to make things work. So we discussed the Philistines make a pact with him. We're charging forward. We're short on time. And Esav's 40 years old. He takes a wife who's a pagan. He names her Yehudit. The word Yehudi means monotheist. He's trying to impress everyone. And his wives are offering incense to the idols in the house, and Yitzchak can't stand it. Our sages say, if you take an earthenware vessel and you clash it with a vessel made of bone, the bone will smash the earthenware vessel. Bone is harder than earthenware. Our sages say this as a metaphor. A woman was made out of man's rib. She's made out of bone. Man was made from earth. He's like the earthenware vessel. Clash the two together. Who wins? Woman wins. Clash bone against bone. They can keep clashing and they won't break. So too, a woman can stand up to a woman, but a man can't stand up to a woman. So when Yitzchak is being yelled at by Esav's wife, Yitzchak can't handle it. Rivka can handle it. A woman can handle a woman. Sometimes men make a mistake. They think, I could handle it, right? Chazal warned us. It doesn't exactly work that way. A woman can stand up to a woman, but a man has a hard time standing up to a woman. So Yitzchak loses his sight, and it's his birthday. He's getting old. It's Pesach. He calls in Esav, and he tells him, son, I don't know when I'm going to die. I'm 5 years away from the age my father passed away. I'm already an old man. And our sages say once a person approaches 5 years from the age his father passed away, he has to start worrying about his own death. So he calls in Esav, and he says, do me a favor, sharpen your blade, go and hunt for me an animal that's kosher, that's not stolen, and prepare it the way I taught you to shecht an animal. I want you to make food the way I like it, because when we want to give a blessing, so it helps to have something physical to arouse that feeling of happiness to give a blessing. So you'll give me something and I'll give you something. You'll give me something physical, I'll give you something spiritual. Rivka overhears this, and Esav charges out of the house, and Esav thinks to himself, if I find something, good. And if I don't find something, I'll steal something. I'm going to get that blessing. And he charges out into the woods and he sets up a trap and he wants to catch two animals so he has enough meat that he knows his father likes. He catches one animal and he goes out to trap the second animal. He finally catches the second animal, comes back, and the first animal's gone. So he ties the second animal he caught and he says, okay, now I'm going to catch a third animal. He roams around the forest till he finally sees a third animal, catches it, goes back, and sees the second animal's gone. And this goes on and on and on because Hashem wants Yaakov to get the blessings, and things are taking a long time. Rivka calls in Yaakov, and she says, you know, I overheard this conversation. Go bring me from my goats. Goat meat can taste like deer meat. And Yaakov says, Mom, how can I take Dad's goats? Dad didn't give me permission. And his mother says, yeah, our deal was when we got married, every day he gives me two goats. That's the deal he made with my father. Every day I get two goats. I can make meat. That's a ton of meat. Every day, two goats worth of meat. So he brings her the goats. And he's close to 60 years old. So he tells his mother, you know, I'm smooth and Esav's hairy. If my father feels me, he's going to get very upset. He's going to curse me. And his mother says, it's on me. Our sages say, that's nonsense. What does that mean, it's on me? That's an interesting point. Sometimes a mother will make a promise, and that's why I pointed out later on in the parasha that Rebekah throws all the blame back to Yaakov. Initially, she made the promise, it's all on me, just do it. But what happens when Esav really blows a gut? What does she tell him? She says, look, you got to leave because of what you did to your brother. Wait until your brother forgets what you did to him and then I'll call you back. Right? So she doesn't take all the responsibility. At any rate, she tells him it's on me. Her sages say what she was telling him is, I have a prophecy that you're supposed to get these blessings tonight. And I have a prophecy that you won't get cursed, so don't worry about it. So he brings her the food, and she makes it. She knows how Yitzchak likes his food. And then she goes, she has a special place where she's hidden those special clothing that Esav stole from Nimrod. Esav knows he can't trust his wives. Esav knows that. Well, he hasn't been trustworthy to his wives. Esav has been cheating on his wife his whole life. Our sages say Esav would wait part of his daily routine. He'd go around and follow men and see when men left their houses, and then he'd go in and rape their wives. So the wives wouldn't necessarily be comfortable telling their husbands what happened. And this was a common thing that Esav did. So Esav wasn't faithful to his wives. Our sages say when a person isn't faithful to his wife, so then his wife is going to sense it and she won't be faithful with him. So Esav is living this married life with these two women, but who knows what else is going on. So Esav knows better than to leave his most cherished item, those clothing that he stole from Nimrod, leaving it at home. So Esav says to his mother, "Mom, I want to leave these by you. Now those clothing smell of the Garden of Eden. They're the handiwork of Hashem." So Rebekah calls in Yaakov and says, "Here, wear these." So Yaakov's going to walk into his father, and his father's going to sense the Garden of Eden, because these clothing are from the Garden of Eden. And she takes the goat's hairs and she puts them in his garment so that the hairs that are sticking out, it feels like he's hairy. She gives him all the food like he's a little boy. He's a grown man. He's over a half a century old. He's over 50. And she tells him, "Here, take these." And she puts the food in his hand, and he's crying. And his mother says, "Come, son, this way." And she takes him by the hand and leads him to Yitzchak. And he's crying. And so Hashem sends an angel to his right and an angel to his left. And he feels support, and he feels, this is what Hashem wants me to do. He walks into the room, and he's trembling. And he says, "Father." And he says, "I'm here. Who are you?" That gentle voice doesn't sound to him like Yaakov. And now Yaakov has to do something which he seems to be good at. He says, "I'm Esav, your firstborn son. I did what you told me." Is he Esav? Well, Yaakov was going to bless Esav because he thought that Esav had the rights to be the continuation of the family. He is unaware that Esav gave those rights to Yaakov. What good is it that Yaakov is going to get a blessing when Yitzchak thinks he's blessing Esav? Imagine you're the father. You're blessing a child, and you think you're blessing the other kid. Does that blessing carry any weight? Well, if we recognize that a blessing is not a function of the human, but rather it's a function of the Shekhinah, God's presence with the human, so then the Shekhinah isn't fooled. Yitzchak knows that when he's going to bless Yaakov, he senses Hashem is there. He senses that it's the Shekhinah blessing him. He senses that Hashem is there blessing this child. So even though he's trying to figure out who it is, and he keeps feeling like this is not Esav, he sees that Hashem is with the blessing. What he's blessing him is, "Hashem should bless you." And Hashem does bless him. So Yitzchak gives him these blessings of bounty and being the master and mastering his brother, and no one could curse him. And Hashem is with him on all those blessings. He finishes the blessings, and Yaakov stands on the side in the shadows as Esav comes charging in. He's finally had the food, and we know the rest of the story. Esav lets out a roar, and he cries, and for that tear, we paid a heavy price. The whole story of Haman being able to threaten the whole Jewish people with annihilation was because of those tears that Esav shed. If you pay close attention throughout Tanakh and the Shas, we are taught that tears that stem from true emotion carry a weight that they pierce the heavens. We learned yesterday about Sisera's mother. And that woman was vile. We learned about her cruelty. And yet when she sheds earnest tears, those tears carry a weight till today. Our sages warn us about the tears of an orphan, the tears of a widow. We are taught that although every gate can close in heaven, the gates of tears do not close. El dimati al techerash. David HaMelech doesn't have to ask Hashem to listen to his tears. All he has to ask is, "Don't be silent to my tears, because you hear them." We are taught that tears pierce the heaven when they are sincere. And so Yaakov is going to flee for his life. He's going to run away to find the right shidduch from the right family, a family with good traits. And he's really running away for his life from his brother Esav, hoping that his brother will calm down. And in the next 2 weeks, we will learn about that trait of Esav, that Esav never calms down. Esav bears a grudge for life, as we will see, but Yaakov is running for his life.